Hey everyone, I'm Dahlia.
And I'm Alma. This is Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast.
Good morning. Okay, good so morning. It's morning for us. Doesn't mean that you all are listening in your morning, so I apologize. Good day to you, monsieur.
Good day.
I like saying that. I don't know why, because monsieur.
That's what I do, really, too.
It because doesn't you make say, sense.
It does, because you say m'lady, so I say monsieur. It totally makes sense.
Okay, it makes sense. All right. Okay, so how are you doing, Alma?
I am doing great. I'm really, really, really pumped up on coffee this morning.
Did you just say coffee?
Yeah.
I like your coffee cup. It says coffee makes me poop.
Yeah. I stole this one from Sean. It's bigger than mine. Look at how big it is.
It's bigger than your face.
Yeah.
For real. And I think it is.
So it's got some espresso in there.
You're drinking coffee. You have not been drinking coffee for a while.
Yeah. I said, fuck it. Yeah. I'm just going to drink it. It's good for my body. It's okay. Acid reflux? Who cares? Lots of people live with things. Okay.
With things.
I need caffeine, and I've been doing tea, and it's not the same. Like, tea has given me nothing. It tastes nice. It's pleasant. I should be sitting outside watching my chickens in the yard, and it doesn't give me coffee vibes. Coffee vibes is get shit done, you know, to work while you're cleaning up your kitchen, that kind of vibe. Tea, no good. Coffee, yes.
That's so funny, because I was actually thinking of having some tea with this while we were recording this episode, just because I had I've been having trouble sleeping. Like, I always have trouble sleeping, but I think it's gotten worse. And so my therapist recommended, because I was like, you know, I'm using the apps. I'm using those things. I think it's called Better Sleep. I think it's what it's called.
That's what it's called.
Uh-huh. And it's just some of these things aren't working right now. And I don't want to do medicinal. I'm trying to stay away from that. So I was talking to my therapist. She goes, just go old school. She's like, read a book and drink some like sleepy tea, you know, some sleepy tea. That makes it sound bad, but some tea and non-caffeinated tea.
It's called that, though.
It's sleepy time.
Yeah, sleepy time. And I'm like, that tells you exactly what it's meant for. It took me a solid like 4 or 5 days to adjust the time zone. So I was having trouble sleeping, but not really, because you saw me. I'll sleep whenever. I was having difficulty sleeping at night. So now I'm falling asleep by 10 and I'm up by 5 in the morning. So I think that's good. And you know, women are supposed to get more sleep than men. It's science. Okay.
I have never heard of that. For real?
I was reading about it and I said, for real? Because I don't know any woman that sleeps a lot. You know?
I don't either.
Is it? I don't know what it is. And
not that there's anything wrong with it. I mean, if you can get your sleep on, get your fucking sleep on. And I'll just be jealous over here that the fact that you can get your sleep on. I never heard that before. Huh.
I'll have to find it, because what if I read it wrong and I've been repeating it? Because like, I'm ready to fight people at 5 a.m. I'm like, fuck yeah, get up. It's like, yes, I'm going to face the day. I was watching a movie.
Okay, so you just realized that you're mother now, right? You just basically said your mother. And you hated it when mother did that.
I did. Yeah, because, I'm annoying. And I'm, you know, and I'm over here feeding my 100 cats and my dogs and playing in the bed and just having the best life at like 5 a.m. I've accepted it. That's me. Oh, and I've been having some great dreams, because while we were gone, The Last of Us, you know, premiered and everything. And so I've been catching up on that. So I've been having The Last of Us dreams, which has been fun. They've been really exciting. And in my dreams, I would survive an apocalypse.
Okay.
In
I like
real
that.
Life, I would not. Would not survive an apocalypse. So while we were on I'll bring this up vacation one more time because everybody in my family is tired about.
Well, you're doing it a very funny way with your family, though.
Yes, I am. It's hysterical. Please come to my home and I will annoy the shit out of you. So I keep bringing up Vietnam and everything and everything. The food was better, the coffee, everything. You know, I just keep doing that on purpose. But I've been getting so much on everybody's nerves that I have to tell myself, like, I was doing it to be funny. And now it's like accidental, like I'm doing it like just too much. But the whole vacation kind of it threw off everything. So now I'm home and it's just taken me a little while to catch up to everything. I've been watching TV to catch up on my shows, movies, all the stuff we missed because while we were gone, we didn't watch all the movies and stuff. Like I didn't watch one horror movie while we were gone.
I did either. I if I watched something at night to try to get to sleep, it was just like a series on Hulu, on Netflix or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember what the point of this conversation was, but I'm going to finish it with, I didn't watch any horror while we were gone.
I love what you said. I don't remember the point of this.
Oh, the apocalypse. Okay. We met a lovely gentleman who was like a chef who did a cooking class with us. And do you recall how he had the garden and the chickens and everything?
Yeah,
and during the pandemic, he took the time to learn these things. He had new plants. He had like green mangoes and bananas grow in his yard and papaya, all kinds of plants and chickens. And I just turned to my favorite new couple. You know, I was like, I looked at Jane and Paul and I was like, I would never survive an apocalypse because that dude became like self-sustaining, like for his family. It was,
and he had he had coconuts. And yes. he had community that nearby, they all had like different kinds of vegetables and herbs and shit.
They like get together, they get their shit from the neighbors. I would have murdered somebody. No, I don't think I would have murdered anybody. I think that I would have been the one murdered for nothing because they would have been like, this lady didn't even know how to grow a plant. So I would survive nothing. I can never survive an apocalypse. But in my dreams, I'm a badass that is just out like with the guns and foraging.
Well, I love
and shit.
That in your dreams, you would survive. And real quick, since we mentioned the vacation last time for now, I just want to do a quick shout out to Raj, our newest listener. He was on our in our group while we were vacationing. And he happens to be a huge horror fan too. And that was a topic of discussion we got to enjoy with somebody outside of me and Alma just blabbing away to each other. So that was cool. So hi, Raj.
Yes, we had great horror conversations. And that's why I wanted to, this gives an excellent segue to this movie that we're discussing this week, which is The Old Ways. And there's a reason it's going to come in a couple of times, but because when you meet people, you bring up horror, they're going to like it or they don't like it. But it always is kind of curious when people are kind of like in the black and white, they just don't like it because genre, like it's just, these movies are all so diverse and they cross, you know, they're like genre bending films. They're sci-fi, they're drama, they're thriller, they're everything. And so it always just kind of amazes me when it's just like a blanket, I don't like this, because with horror, there's so much that it crosses the lines into that you can find completely fascinating, interesting. I really think that I could find, unless you just don't like film, I think I could find a film that's horror for anybody based on their likes.
Uh-huh. And, you know, I totally get that too, though. I totally get unless you don't like film, because I didn't used to get that, like, oh, I don't like watching TV or I don't like movies, or I'd be like, oh, look at you. Good for you. But now I kind of get it, though. I could see how someone just doesn't like movies at all. I mean, you have to sit there for like
movies.
And you have to dedicate time and you have to, especially a series, a TV series. But luckily this movie, I liked it a lot. I first saw this movie last year for a film festival. I can't remember which one. This, you know, my memory, it sucks.
That's where we saw it, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we originally watched it last year.
How do I know this movie?
Mm-hmm. And it was so good. And the one thing I didn't follow up on, which I should have followed up on, and I completely forgot till right now when we were talking, was I love the soundtrack for this movie. I fucking love the soundtrack for this movie. And I remember bringing that up in one of the message boards where the people who made this movie were part of that message board. And they said that there was going to be a record, like a literal record, vinyl coming out for this soundtrack. And I never followed up on that. So I'm going to have to look that up later and find out if that has happened yet. Cause I know it can take a while for that kind of thing to happen, especially you have to, you know, for it to get pressed and all that good shit.
Follow up because see this, like you were talking about vinyl and finding people who like vinyl. Yeah, I get it. Like I always just, you know, think that there's something that you could enjoy. So that's why I like this movie, because I think that it could appeal to a lot of people in different ways. So this movie, originally it was made 2020, written by Marcos Gabriel, directed by Christopher Allender. I said that with a Spanish accent. I don't think it is. Marcos Gabriel or Gabriel? One of the two.
Gabriel.
Yeah. It is Gabriel?
Yeah, why not?
Okay, because I'm not ever sure, like, if it, you know, but I made it into a Spanish accent.
Yeah, Marcos, come on.
And so we have, like, Brigitte. So is it Bridget or Brigitte Callie Canales as Christina?
So real quick, I wanted to say that we're still doing Women of Horror, of course. So I think we fixated on the badass actresses and characters in this movie. So I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Go on.
No, that's good, because that's the reason we talked about this movie. She is of Mexican and Cuban descent, that actress. Andrea Cortez plays Miranda. That's Christina's cousin in the movie. Sal Lopez as Javi. Julia Vera as Luz. AJ Bowen as Carson. Michelle Jubilee Gonzalez as Christina's mom in the movie. And Elizabeth Phoenix Caro as young Christina, or like we always say, Christina.
Oh, I think I hear the doggies in your house. Or maybe the neighbor.
The neighbor's dogs.
Oh, no. I know you hate it when that happens. I'm sure they're absolutely adorable, but their timing. You got to go over there and talk to those little doggies before you start recording and say, like, look here. Here's the deal. I'm about to start recording. So y'all can bark afterwards. But while I'm recording, you shh. So we found this movie on Netflix. I don't know. When it's available on Netflix like this, is it available anywhere else? Or I don't know how that works. But anyways.
Well, I didn't look up to see the other channels or avenues. I'm going to start doing that, because usually there's like two or three places you can watch the movies. I was watching a movie last night that had it in five different places, and four of them were for free streaming. So like Roku channel, you know, we're talking about Tubi, like that kind of thing. And for some reason, my husband chose to rent it, because I guess he was like, I ain't watching commercials. And like I said, I'm not minding the commercials lately. So
yeah, you don't mind commercials. So
yeah, I've gotten into it. I dig it. It's like that. I'm just thinking it's just more entertaining that way. Take some notes, get up and stretch. I have a short attention span, but yet I can get through these movies.
Well, I think that's probably why commercials work with the short attention span, because it gives you those breaks that you need. Okay, so this movie is starring, we already just said, is about Christina Lopez, a Mexican-American reporter who returns to her hometown near Veracruz, Mexico, in search of a story on witchcraft. There she is kidnapped by a group of locals, including a bruja who believes her to be possessed by a demon. So that's really how it starts. It just jumps right into the movie like that, doesn't it?
So yeah, it is basically, we already know, I like that it gave up that she was going to be like, we already knew the whole kind of background in it. So like, what's the twist? And it started off with her as a young child seeing her mother getting exorcised, right? By a local bruja. And it was like, oh, and then the same thing happens to her. It's like a generational thing. And so I think that was the twist here. That's like a generic word I'm using. I wish I was better with words, but you know.
No, I totally get it. I think people understand that too. And like, as far as like, is it generational? Is it generational to be susceptible to be possessed, because when the way Christina gets possessed is because she goes to a place called La Boca. It looks like a cave or something that she goes into, and that's where she knows the story to be, and that's where, you know, presumably she gets possessed. We don't know how the mom got possessed. All we know is we see flashbacks of faith healers and stuff around the mom, while young Christina is standing nearby seeing what's going on. The problem, I think, is, though, that Christina comes in already with kind of like a chip on her shoulder because of what happened to her mom. Her mom passes away. I've watched this movie twice, but I don't really know assuming, if that's what happens.
Yeah, I'm assuming, because then she's taken away to America, because she isn't speaking Spanish anymore. When she was little, she was. They show that she has distanced herself, and it's probably because of a grudge, like you said. She is raised in America and is raised in foster homes. That was what I was trying to think of. Yeah. Foster homes. So she doesn't have that family bond anymore. She's like,
yeah. It seems like she keeps in kind of very low contact with them because of her cousin. She ends up talking to her cousin for a little bit, and it seems like they're aware of each other and what they're up to, but maybe not like the best of friends like we were with our cousins growing up, or how our kids are now, you know, best friend cousins, or what do we used to call them? Sister cousins or something like
sister
that.
Sister cousin,
yeah. Our families are kind of really close. But also, I think also Christina believes that that the faith healers are the ones that killed the mom, and that her mom was just sick. You know, I'm doing quotes, just sick versus being possessed. So she's blamed. So, of course, when she gets kidnapped and they start trying to do the faith healing on her, then she's really pissed off because, first of all, you're kidnapped. I mean, who wouldn't be pissed off?
Yeah, she's totally kidnapped. And by family,
exactly. And then secondly, the fact that she really doesn't believe in this whole demon possession shit, because she's not feeling it, even though the bruja, you know, the faith healer, totally is saying, like, who do you believe? Do you believe the person who just says that you're possessed, or do you believe your own feelings? I do want to start off real quick, because the movie starts off, like I said, it just starts off sudden. She's been kidnapped. And one of the first things they do to her, and I forgot to look this up, even though I wrote it down in my notes, I'm so pissed off about it, was the goat's milk. Oh my fucking God. I wanted to vomitate all over the place because, first of all, I hate milk. I hate milk. No offense to people who like, no offense to anybody who likes it. It's a personal thing. I get that. But I just cannot stand it. I cannot stand the taste. So when they were forced feeding her, forced drinking her, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah.
The goat's milk, I couldn't take it. I couldn't take it. It was way too much.
I'm fixated on forced drinking, because it's force feeding. Is it forced drinking?
I'm sorry. I should have said anything. Now I'm going to be
okay. Because it's too much. It's too much. It also goes, because people, you know, if you don't like milk, you don't like milk. But also, if you're in, you know, in the America, then you're probably drinking cow milk, and it is so it's probably strange to drink another animal's milk, but this is weird just because it's milk, period. It's like,
yeah, drink it. It's like a gallon of it too at a time.
What if she's lactose intolerant like me, you know? This could have
the whole thing. Just I couldn't do it, just simply because of the milk. I would be like, let the demon take over me. I'm not drinking that.
They're serious with this shit. There's a step process here. She is chained up. She's in a little room, almost like an imprison, and her cousin is really trying to distance herself right away from Christina, but obviously not too much, because they think they're there to help her. There's a man who won't speak to her, and then we have the bruja, the Nahua bruja. So everything, and also because the bruja is speaking in indigenous language that she's not aware of, it's even more, everything that is happening to around her is completely out of her control. And one of the first things they say is like the bruja walks up to her and she looks at her and you see something moving in her eye. So it's leading you to believe, is she seeing something that's not there, or is there really something there? And that's why I like the movie. It's almost like it could just be open to interpretation. Yeah. It doesn't matter if it was written this way or that. But I think that it leaves the audience more open to enjoy the film in a way that they would be comfortable with. It's like she has some kind of trauma, and she has a lot of bad memories, everything. And then she was coming to investigate, but they're not really saying why she's coming to investigate, like, right away, like
the specifically place that she's at.
The location.
And one thing I do want to add, the element of why we're not exactly sure if it's not real or if it is real, is because we're dealing with an addiction issue here too. So
Surprise.
Is Christina dealing with withdrawals? Because she eventually starts having to go through withdrawals. So is she dealing with issues of withdrawal? And, you know, is she imagining? Because once things start happening to her where she's actually seeing and experiencing things, because at first she isn't seeing or experiencing anything. Then when she starts to, she's like, is this real or is it part of the withdrawal that I'm going through? So and so you can't really believe anything. You're at a point where you can't believe anything that's going on. And also because of the fact that there is that the language barrier. See, she grew up speaking Spanish, but she doesn't speak it anymore because she didn't have the people around her to help her keep speaking the language. So there's that lack of real communication being able to go on. But at the same time, would they really have told her everything that was going on? They need her to be locked up. They need her chained up. They need her separated from everybody. Even the cousin, like you said, is being distant. But is this cousin being distant because they were distant because, you know, they're not friends? Or was she being distant and holding off because there's that demon possession? So I like the way they did all that. It's so multi-layered that at first you're like, is anything really going on? Why is the family being jerks to her? Why is she being a jerk? You know, it's everything going on at once.
Yes. Are we dealing with literal or figurative demons? It is basically up to us to figure that out. And one of the big things I noticed was she was asking for her bag. Now they keep questioning, like, what were you doing there in that location or whatever. She's asking for her bag, and it's like, you don't think they went through your bag? She gets the bag back and steals her. What was it? Like, what is she addicted to? Like,
I think it was heroin.
Okay.
Because she's injecting it. I don't know. Sorry if I'm saying the wrong thing, everybody. But you're right.
Yeah. I was trying to remember if it was intravenous or whatnot. She does have needles and stuff like that. And it made me think that they went through her stuff. They know what she has in it. Because they obviously would have been looking for information on why isn't she, what was she doing there at that spot? Okay. So it at least her cousin and the Bruja, they do believe her to be possessed by a demon. And once she starts to have withdrawals, seeing things that could be something that she's just seen and suffering from withdrawal. But they're putting her through a physical and like brutal, almost like forced withdrawal regardless, right? Because they took it away from her.
Which is like, is that good too? Is that helping her? Or could it have been done differently so that she could come off of it differently and maybe not as harshly? You can look at this so many different ways. And then there are parts too, which I like that, there's animal violence, but there are parts where some animals get killed in the little cell with her. And we see that it was done by something, but then it quickly turns to it's in her hands, or it was her that has the blood on her, like the literal blood on her hands. So it's like, wait a minute.
Did you do that? Yeah. It's confusing and misleading on purpose to like keep us in the story, you know, and that, I really enjoyed that. That's why I said this is why it's such an excellent idea, like to get people to watch things sometimes that you think are not like necessarily like horror. You can interpret it at like adding fantasy elements, like, yeah, you know, I was thinking of Tigers Are Not Afraid, the fantasy elements that are added to the real life horror. That was like a drama movie, but it's horror and it's life. And in here you have this woman struggling with what she saw in her mom. Like you mentioned, she saw her sick. Maybe her mom had addiction, which isn't something that's hereditary, but could be generational because of the environment that you're in. You know, just because something happened to you doesn't mean that necessarily going to keep happening. But because of the exposure, it was something that she was already predisposed to, like knowing that that was a sickness. Her cousin saw it, so maybe she saw in her the sickness as well, and they're trying to do something that's good for her, but with their supernatural beliefs, they honestly thought that this was like a demon that possessed the mom, and they were doing what they thought was right, and she could have died from just the withdrawal effects or something. We don't know. And with her, she is suffering, and she has this secret addiction, and when it comes out, though, it is really surprising because you see her, like, she's a reporter, she's a strong, independent woman.
She is,
you know what I mean, she's taking care of business.
And she's not this broken person either, even though the way we're describing her, she's not this broken person. She's been handling shit her whole life. This is just the way that she has been dealing with the issues, with the cards that have been dealt, you know, the way they say.
Her anger is what's repressed. She represses that.
Right. And sadness, we only know she's trying to, because we only know as much as she does. And so the little glimpses that we get into the mother, she loved her mother. And then she sees her mother was taken away from her. So she's trying to... Unfortunately, sometimes, you know, we're taught that sadness or whatever, or depression or all that, is a weakness. And maybe that's a little bit of what's going on here. So it was her cousin that, I forget the cousin's name already.
Miranda.
It was Miranda that found her in the cave. And I'm guessing that's because, I already forgot the finer details. I forgot. But she had been in contact with her cousin a little bit. And that's also a little bit of the story here. So we're talking about the demons and her own issues, like the literal and the figurative demons that that Christina's been having to deal with. But then we also have the relationship between Christina and her cousin Miranda, because they're aware of each other's lives, the way they live it and all that, but they're not close. Christina feels abandoned by her family because of the fact that she was taken back to the United States, and that's where she lived her life, and she didn't have her family around her. So she feels abandoned by her family. So she's pissed off at Miranda, and like, why didn't you try harder for a relationship between us? And Miranda throws it back on her, like, well, you could have tried too, you know? So there's this tension between the two of them while they're going through all this. And then there's, like we said, there's the Bruja. I don't know if she's actually related to them, though. Is she?
I don't think there's any relation to her other than probably a community relationship. So also because the man Javi, which we discover later, speaks English just fine. But he was ignoring her, and she thought he was ignoring her because of a language barrier. But it was only because, you can see, as an outsider, I think he's trying to keep as much distance from her so he doesn't sympathize and help her get loose or help her free herself, because what they think they're doing is right. And what they think they're doing is going to heal her and make her better. So that's also another thing, because it's a very small cast, very strong cast. And each one of them has their role in this, but it's also to show you that it's the fewer people, the better, so that they can give her what she needs. And obviously, like, she starts to see things. There's that scene, which I had to explain because I watched this with my youngest. And she was like, what are they doing? Because, you know, it always kind of hurts me when the ritual, you know, when you push your hands in and they're like, they use their bare hands to kind of rip into you and pull something out, and they pulled out teeth, right?
Yes.
And my daughter was like, why are they doing that? It's because they're trying to pull like the evil. They're trying to pull out the bad thing that's inside of her. And that part always makes me squeamish, because when seeing those as kids and on TV and movies and everything like that, do you get that squeamish feeling of like someone pushing in you?
Yeah.
And like, oh, I feel it. And it reminds me of getting like having surgery, because it's like they say, no, you don't feel the pain, but you feel that pushing.
But you feel the pressure and everything.
And the pressure. And it like the air is being knocked out of you. And so they're doing that because they're trying to literally pull like the demon out of her. And don't they do it like two times? Because another time it's like she sees a snake or something being pulled out of her.
I don't know. I thought it was just the one time, but it could have been a couple of times. You're right though. The way they're, and it's kind of funny that you mentioned that as something that gets under your skin, like literally, because it's my real world connection after this, I want to discuss. But exactly. It's she's doing that. It's called the psychic healing or psychic surgery, where they're going in and manipulating and everything. But you're right, because putting the pressure, like even when you do it to yourself, and if you're going down with hard pressure, that's what they're doing.
They're doing
hard pressure. Yeah, uh-huh. Like with when you get a cesarean, it's like you know.
Yes, I was gonna specifically say it. That's what it. Yeah. And it was. I looked at my notes real quick because it was a snake. And that is the part where Christina's looking like, holy shit, there's something inside of me. And the bruja is unsuccessful at pulling it out. And it's just like, pull it out of her, get it out of her, because it goes on. It may not have been long, but the it just like, I don't know, that always makes me very squeamish and stuff. And so on her end, that's when she's like, okay, I am fucking possessed. We need to get this shit out of me. Or it's a complete situation where she is there. Seriously, I need help. And I think that she gives in to the, what is it called? The exorcism. I was going to call it a depossession.
Yeah. She finally decides that she's okay. I see it. I get it. I'm all in now. And that's when she decides also that she's completely she's going to stop taking the drugs that she's been doing, because she has to be 100% tip top. I don't even know what that means. Tip top shape. What is tip top? Is that a thing?
I like
did I make that up?
She did wants I, to be clean, Dahlia.
Okay. Yeah. But did I make that up? I don't know.
Anyways. Because I don't think that she's going to be tip top by giving up the heroin, because that's actually it's actually weakening her because of the withdrawal. So, right. But I think that she wants to be mentally 100% so that she can give in to it. Because during that process of pulling out the snake and everything and the teeth, she's not giving in. She's fighting it still. Her like relinquishing the drugs is what I think is giving her the mental capacity to accept that she's going to be getting help, and she's going to end this cycle, because her mom was possessed and she is. And she's like, no, if I'm going to do this, I'm going, you know, balls in. I think that's a good expression, Paulson.
Okay, so we're just making up expressions, gross. Or these are real expressions. We have no idea. We did not grow up in an area of the country where these are common sayings. So we hear them and we kind of just go with them. So let's talk about the mysterious
little
boy.
Isn't it bald deep? Okay, I'll drop it. I don't know.
Okay, I don't know either. let's talk about the mysterious little boy who shows up. She keeps seeing this mysterious little boy, and at first we think he's a little boy from the nearby community or whatever, and then we turn out that nobody knows who the little boy is. So do we ever find out who that little boy is? Or are we just to assume?
I don't think so.
That he's...
I kept coming up with a lot of scenarios for it, and I don't think they were answered. Because I was like, okay, first of all, for right away, nobody else saw him. So I was like, and when she asked about him, I was like, oh, she's seen a ghost. But whose ghost is it? And why does it happen to be male when she's a little girl? When the incident or when the things are happening. So I don't fucking know.
I don't think I even have a good hypothesis.
Dude,
of what's
is
going
it the
on
demon
here.
Coming to her? Like another form? Like maybe that's what it was.
Maybe that's what it is, because I really don't think we find out who the little boy is. I'm trying to think hard about it. Maybe it was.
Well, tell us about the demon. Tell us about the demon, because they do figure it out.
Okay. So yeah. So what's interesting about the demon is, so when we're going through the exorcisms, or one.
The Depossession.
It's called the Depossession. Yeah. the Bruja seems to have gotten rid of this demon, right? There comes a point where, but what happens to her?
She dies.
She dies.
She sacrifices herself for the depossession of Cristina.
Right.
And
no, so I don't know how to pronounce the name of this demon. Postecki, yeah. It is,
I'm gonna go with that.
Is, yeah, sure. it entered her from her, because like you said, she was weak through, well, you said also from the withdrawals, but she was susceptible to the possession because she was a broken person. And that broken person theme comes into play here in a little bit. That's why I mentioned
it. Because Postecki is the death god of broken things.
Yeah.
Ooh, that sounds so serious.
It is. She is.
Why not be the healing god of broken things?
But it doesn't take away from her being a badass either. I mean, she's been through a lot in her life. In a way, she still is broken because, you know, she was separated from her mother. She was separated from her family. She was separated from her roots.
Hey, and Dahlia, your roots are showing. Sorry, that was a random quote from another movie. Never mind. Go on.
And that movie, it's a movie that I'm always hunting for and I cannot find anywhere. You can't find it online. You can't find it streaming anywhere. The movie's called Shag. People.
You don't still have it on VHS?
I lost it. So damn. I don't deserve to be here right now because I've lost that movie. It's one of the greatest movies ever. But anyways, it's got Phoebe Cates in it. I always forget her name.
Her roots. Okay, we're talking about the roots.
Oh, yeah. So let's go back. So we're going back. So she's been separated from all that. So obviously, you know, it's enough of a break there for Postecki to be able to inhabit her body. Okay, so the Bruja dies. Very sad. But we think he's been vanquished, you know? Mm-hmm. And he kind of was because he's not in Cristina anymore. Who's he in?
He's in Miranda.
He's in Miranda, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. He got sucked into Miranda.
Yeah.
And see, this is when I got mad because the Bruja died for nothing.
Yeah.
She died for nothing. So she's healed. She's 100%. Okay. Uh-huh. There was, I'll bring it up because it does kind of come out and it when the Bruja did work because it came out and manifested itself into like an actual physical thing that they could see, touch, feel, and everything. So that was like fucking cool, right? But there was another part real quick I wanted to mention because I fucking loved it, because you know how salt always comes into play with you know, blocking out evil ghosts and all that kind of shit. And Cristina's running, and that's also a thing that helps convince her, is because she can't cross the salt. So she's like, oh fuck, I'm evil. But I love that scene. And the special effects that they use in the movie, that's why I brought it up, is because I love that, because it's like it, I think of smoke and mirrors, you know what I mean? And the what they use in it is like, it's very jarring because it's not like there's stuff the whole movie, it's not like there's shit flying around, but when they do use it, it's just like, it's like stark contrast to the plain kind of environment that they're in with nothing else. It's just like, it's kind of peaceful where she's confused. And then all of a sudden there's a fucking demon standing there or whatever. And when she hits that wall of the salt, that was really, really, really cool. But
it was.
So it made itself into Miranda. And I don't even know how, I don't remember how it got into her, but I guess it's because it got loose.
She had gotten during the exorcism, Cristina had scratched Miranda. And so, I guess that was the break that it
needed. But also, see, Cristina was scratched in the beginning by her mom. Now, here's what's important, because that also shows you that Miranda is a, and I'm using quotes, a broken thing, because she does have, we brought it up, she has a little grudge against her cousin. She was abandoned by her cousin. She didn't have her. She didn't, obviously, they also don't have any other outside family. It's almost like they both lost their family over the years and have no familial relationships. So that made her susceptible to the getting possessed. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. And so you just finished saying like the bruja had died for nothing. And I don't know. I kind of like to think of it like, if I put a positive spin on it, I want to say that the bruja had reached the end of her healing ways. Like she was, she probably wasn't as strong as she used to be. And they need to get rid of this thing. I'm not saying she intentionally.
I can see that. That she's not strong anymore because she's gotten older and it is physically draining. Well, then why not have her live out her little retirement years with a little chicken farm?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying it intentionally, obviously. Of course, she wants to, you know, live forever, you know, but maybe not forever. But anyways.
But this is why it's interesting, too, because she passes away. She's killed by the demon. And then she literally hands down this.
Right.
The whole brujeria, the whole their history. She hands down language all physically because now Christina gets the books, the readings, the writings, and that's what I find really cool.
She sees it, and not only does she see it like all literally spelt out in front of her, but she's experienced it. That's the difference here. She's experienced it, so she knows how much you can take, how much can you really take? Like, so if someone's doing these things to you because they feel like it'll help, but, you know, maybe they'll back off a little bit or maybe they'll push too hard, but she knows, oh, you can keep taking this because I took it and I know that you can get through this. So when she's helping Miranda.
But she lost her eye in the process of getting depossessed. I brought it real quick. I don't want to forget because that also makes her look badass.
It does make her look badass, and it kind of makes her look like the bruja too. Like what happened to the bruja, you know, maybe something similar, but it does make her look badass. So she's able, because she's experienced it, because she has these books and these writings and this whole experience now, she's able to help Miranda. Or does she? I like saying it like that. Well,
so they have a mini learning montage where she's like getting in her books and studying and learning. And she's getting even more badass with her one ojo. And she's like, I'm going to do this for you. Meanwhile, her boss that she wrote a letter to right before she left and came to Mexico is also looking for her. So right now we're working on Miranda.
But she told her
she's
to stay away.
To depossess. Yes, she did. But he's gonna show up. I had to mention it because she did have somebody that she knew, but this is what I found sad. Well, it kind of, you know, well, it is kind of sad because she didn't have any friends. This is the only person that she knew who cared about her.
Is it sad though? He brought her heroin. So I don't know.
But that's what I mean is sad. That she didn't even have a real friend in the real world before coming down here. Yeah. But through this process, she rekindled the relationship. Is that the correct word? Rekindled the relationship with her cousin. Mm-hmm. And she's inherited all of this badassery, you know? and so now she has a strong family relationship again and a sense of community because of Javi and knowing the knowledge and everything like that. So she does get to depossess Miranda and then
So she gets not only that, like you said, she also has this strong connection out beyond everything with Miranda because Miranda helped in the process of getting her depossessed. And now she got to do the same for Miranda. And earlier when I said did she get rid of the demon? No, because when her editor Carson shows up, the one we were just talking about, even though she had told him, stay away, don't come here, he comes. So he comes to La Boca because that's where he knew she was going, and he brings her drugs because that's how he knew her. I don't know.
Was helping because initially when she got a hold of him or left a message or something, I can't remember, it was because she was coming in a state of panic. So he thinks that that's because of drug usage. So he thinks, oh, it's because she needs more drugs. Let's get high together. And she's like, she's not about that life no more. She's like, I'm about the
Bruja life. I'm about the old ways life now.
Hence yes. The name. Oh, yes. I am. And she comes in all like, dun,
they fucking some badass, man.
With her one. Oh, shit. Yeah. She's going to come in there. She's going to depossess this motherfucker.
Ow. I love
and the,
I love
the podcast the way right now.
I love the way she comes in. She's so confident. She's just oozing confidence when she comes in because she's lived it, she's done it, and now she sees her friend slash editor in front of her. And when she sits down in front of him, all badass, and then she like grabs his face.
And she sees that little flicker in his eye. She's like,
yes. And she's like, let's get this shit started.
Yes.
It's just like, it's perfectly. And like I said, I fucking love the soundtrack of this movie because it has some of my favorite songs in it. And I'm going to have to look, see if they pressed it this one after all, because I really,
it
really
has
want
La Llorona song in it, right?
Yeah.
I remember that.
It's one of my favorite Dalia versions.
Dalia notices the music a lot better than me because her hearing is better. And I just can keep the volume low, and I read the whole movie mostly, but I missed out on that. But I know that song was in it because it's a beautiful fucking song. It's a beautiful song. So now I'm interested because I think I'll look up the soundtrack and listen to it and see what I missed.
Yeah, it's so good. So definitely watch this movie on Netflix. Will not disappoint. Folk horror, one of my favorite genres of horror.
Yeah,
because you get to learn. Even though when it's not 100% accurate to whatever, because it's horror movies, you got to have a little fun with it and embellish it and all that. It still gives you an insight into that region, that community, that country, that whatever it is that the folk horror is going on about. But anyways, I really enjoyed this movie. Just some truly great actresses and actors in this. And again, on Netflix. So. Yeah. So Alma.
Now you mentioned Dalia, though. I thought you said you had a real world connection for the movie.
I do. And it's about the psychic healing. Let me go ahead and just share, because Alma brought it up and I just love that she brought it up on her own, that she didn't know what I was going to be talking about. That whole scene where the Bruja is digging her hands into the abdomen of Cristina to pull out something. And
okay, I'm going to add sound effects while you tell.
No, please don't. The squish, squish, the
squish, squish.
Yeah. No. I hate those sounds. You know, even with my misophonia, I can't do that. Okay, so faith healers, and I'm going to talk about faith healers and psychic healing or psychic surgery. Okay. So according to the Dictionary of the Esoteric, accounts of psychic surgery started to appear in the spiritualist communities of the Philippines and Brazil in the mid-1900s. And again, we're talking about psychic surgery specifically. One of the first more famous practitioners of psychic surgery was Antonio C. Agbaoa, a.k.a. Tony Agbaoa. He was a Filipino practitioner of psychic surgery. He worked out of Manila. He would supposedly remove tissue from the body of patients without cutting into them. So basically with his hands. In 1968, he was arrested and charged for fraud in the United States. Alma's laughing on mute.
Because I'm like, why? Let him fucking make up his shit if he wants to.
Well, it's harming people, and he's collecting money. That's the whole point, where the fraud comes in. He's taking money from people and he's not actually doing anything for them. So he was arrested and charged for fraud.
I call it donating, but whatever.
In the U.S. for claiming to mend a bone in a patient's neck. Apparently, okay, so this is what's funny about it. Apparently, even Agbaoa, who is the psychic surgeon, he had his own appendix removed, but he didn't do it through psychic surgery. He did it in a hospital. So, I mean, come on. If his shit really worked, he could have taken out his own appendix.
Okay, so now I'm going to totally doubt psychic surgery working just because of this dude. I'm like, I would have psychically surgeonated myself. Hovered that motherfucker out of my body, but he did it. He's a liar.
Yeah, exactly. Psychic surgery ended up making the U.S. headlines in 1984 when Andy Kaufman was diagnosed. He was diagnosed with lung cancer, and apparently he went to the Philippines for a several weeks course of psychic surgery. Practitioner Jun Labo supposedly removed large cancerous tumors, and Kaufman unfortunately believed that his cancer had been removed. He ended up dying from renal failure, which was connected to his lung cancer, in May of 1984. So it's a very short period of time. He had an aggressive form of lung cancer that was pretty rare. Now, I found a lot of information on psychic surgery. And so this is according to Terrence Hines, a professor of psychology, in their book, Pseudoscience and the Paranormal, A Critical Examination of the Evidence. This is what they have to say. Although psychic surgery varies by region and practitioner, it usually follows some common lines. Without the use of a surgical instrument, a practitioner will press the tips of his or her fingers against the patient's skin in the area to be treated. The practitioner's hands appear to penetrate into the patient's body painlessly, and blood seems to flow. The practitioner will then show organic matter or foreign objects apparently removed from the patient's body, clean the area, and then end the procedure with the patient's skin showing no wounds or scars. And that's what we saw in the movie. We saw this exact thing, right, Emma?
It was, it looks gruesome because they'll use things like real parts of animals and blood and, you know. And I'm for something that makes you feel better, but obviously the money taking and whatnot, but I still would do both. And this is why the fraud comes in, like you mentioned, because it's sad, because people will come when it's like the last resort, because they've tried things and they want to believe, and that's why I could never fault anybody for trying something when they've tried everything or willing to try everything, because they're just trying to survive.
And for some people, there is that placebo effect. But for a lot of people, even if there is that placebo effect, it doesn't last very long, because the true disease actually starts to come into play again, because the placebo effect can only last for so long sometimes. Now, as far as psychic surgery goes, it usually doesn't involve actual surgery, although some practitioners do make real incisions into the skin. In some parts of the world where belief in evil spirits is prevalent, the psychic surgeons will sometimes pull objects like glass or rusty nails, saying it was left in the bodies of the afflicted person by evil spirits. Again, we saw this in the movie, The Old Ways. So how do they make it look real or convincing? So the healer is slightly rolls or pinches the skin over the area that's going to be treated. Usually we see this, I wouldn't say usually, but whenever we would see it on TV or stuff or movies, we usually see it happening over the abdominal area. Although in real life, I don't know, it could be happening anywhere, I guess, if you're really trying to do the psychic healing. Mm-hmm. So when the hand is flattened, then they reach under a roll of skin so that it looks like the practitioner is entering the person's body. And I think the way they did it in the movie was actually done real well. So if you've seen the movie, you know exactly how I'm describing it. The healer will have prepared in advance small pellets or bags of animal entrails, which would be palmed in his hand or hidden beneath the table within easy reach. This organic material would simulate the diseased tissue that is going to be removed. If the healer wants to simulate bleeding, then they just squeeze a bladder of animal blood or a sponge. If done properly, it can deceive the people that are watching and the patient. However, some psychic procedures do not rely solely on the sleight of hand. At least one Brazilian surgeon in quotes, also cuts his victim's skin with an unsterilized scalpel to heighten the illusion. That's just fucked up.
Why unsterilized? So that's just rude. Just use some alcohol or something. Burn it. That's just, that's strange.
That's the part. Why? That's the part. Why unsterilized?
I take offense at that.
Why not?
If you're going to fuck with people, why give them germs too?
Oh my God. Okay. So I found this really good Texas Monthly article, and it's actually from 1985, but I'm going to link it anyways because it was so informative and so interesting. And you know, these Texas Monthly articles are usually pretty well done. So, but I'm going to start reading from this article. Now, this article is way, 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 way long. So what I'm reading is nowhere near close to the entirety of the thing, but I'm going to read this. Okay. So Arsenia de la Cruz, daughter of the legendary Filipino healer Eleuterio Terte, said in an interview a few years ago, and this is from 1985, that 90% of all psychic surgery is fake. This is what she says, 90%, right? Her father's bloody operations were the real article, she swore, as are her own. But most healers are mere sleight of hand artists with nylon blood bags hidden between the palm and the thumb. So how in the world is this woman saying, this is me talking, how in this world in the world is this woman saying 90% are all fake, but I'm the real deal and so is my dad? Like, give me a fucking break.
She's trying to corner the market.
Yeah, she definitely is. So let me go on. Genuine psychic operations, she said, require tremendous amounts of magnetic power. Any healer who pretends to perform large number of operations in quick succession is therefore a proven fraud. So says the daughter of Terte, the man who in 1925 came down from the holy mountains and 20 years later performed the civilized world's first bloody operation. That's exhausting. Sorry, I muted myself by accident. It's exhausting sometimes listening to these people. Anyway, so I'm going to keep reading. Nearly every psychic surgeon in the Philippines claims to be related directly or indirectly to Terte and hence to each other. I guess that's how they're going to, you know, try to be part of that circle. Their methods and beliefs are usually self-taught, and their jealousy and self-righteousness infamous. Though they all started life as Roman Catholics, their theologies have evolved into imprecise mixtures. Imprecise. I'm going to, you know, emphasize that word here. Imprecise mixtures of Hinduism, Buddhism, Voodooism, and maybe some other isms yet to be identified. Some healers live ascetic, saintly lives, but many raise hell at every opportunity. They get hangovers like everyone else. Their techniques are as varied as their personalities. Some administer psychic injections from invisible syringes. Some use spiritual X-rays. Some even heal by long distance. A few limit their treatment to spiritual or magnetic massages, laying on of hands, but most accede to the wishes of the public and perform bloody operations. Education and training inhibit faith healers. None of them have studied anatomy, nor do they have any interest in modern techniques of sterilization or anesthesiology. The material that they appear to remove from their patients' bodies is merely the manifestation of an illness. The gunk that was removed in the operations that I saw looked like human or animal tissue, but in rural areas of the Philippines, it is common for psychic surgeons to remove rusty nails, pieces of wire, or bloody palm leaves. So what does all that make you think, Alma?
I think that some people should stop swallowing nails. And people did that, you know. People do that. It's like a condition. So maybe they are really
So far,
pulling
you're
out the
still a
nails and shit.
believer. So far, Alma's still
Well,
a believer.
I am superstitious to the point that if I feel that it is a possibility, I don't want to be made a fool out of. Okay. I don't want to be made a fool out of later and find out that something was correct. I'm waiting for ghosts. Okay. I've not seen a ghost, but I'm waiting for the ghost. And when it shows
Okay.
up, I'm not going to be the one that pisses them off because the ghost is like, I told you I was real. I told you. And then I'll be like, I never doubted it. I just needed evidence. That's all. Just need some evidence.
I love it. Alma's agnostic in all of this. I love it. Okay.
Exactly.
So this reporter writing this piece had some of this psychic surgery performed on himself and had something again supposedly removed. He saved that material pulled and he sent it to a lab. Also, during his reporting, he patronized Willy World. This is again 1985, which was connected to, of course, Willie Nelson. I think it's like a country club, or was a country club. There were a lot of skeptics among the musicians and the talent that would frequent Willy World. Some were ambiguous and some just annoyed at the people that a faith healer whom was invited. The people he was attracting. Okay, let me rephrase that real quick. So Willie Nelson had invited a faith healer to the country club, And because of that person's presence, people who normally patronized the country club were annoyed. And some of these were musicians and other talents, you know, that were kind of famous and stuff like that. They were annoyed at the people, at the faith healer being there, and then the people who the faith healer was attracting. So if somebody was wanted to get some kind of surgery or faith healing done, and they'd go there, they were becoming annoying because it was attracting a lot of those type of people there. So this included one of Willie Nelson's daughters who had had something removed during one of these psychic surgery sessions. So Willie Nelson's own daughter had one of these psychic surgeries. She'd saved a piece of her blood-soaked clothing because she had talked about how maybe she wanted to have it analyzed because she didn't. She said that, if I remember correctly, in the article, it said that she remembered feeling a lot of pain, but that's, you know, because of the pushing and the tugging and everything like that, but that she just couldn't really wrap her head around something having actually been done. So here's what the reporter Gary Cartwright had to say about the analyzing of the material pulled from him and from the clothing from that lady, Willie Nelson's daughter. The piece of meat didn't dematerialize as had been predicted, but it might as well have. The lab report was inconclusive. That meat was a piece of connective tissue, but nobody could say if it was of human origin. I had about given up hope when Bud Schrake called a week later. While playing golf at Willie World, he had come into possession of new and dramatic evidence. The panties that Lana Nelson had worn the day that Angel opened up her lower abdomen. She had been saving them for 4 months, meaning to have the stains analyzed. Lana has graciously donated her panties to your investigation, Schrake told me. I sent the panties by messenger. First of all, I hate saying panties over and over, so I apologize.
Yeah, I'm like, this has gone somewhere else, Thalia. Go on.
Yeah, I sent the panties by messenger to the Bexar County Regional Crime Lab in San Antonio. The stain did turn out to be blood, bovine blood, apparently diluted with water. Not that it will make any difference to the believers, but I had cow ranked third behind chicken and goat. Cat was moving up fast. This is from Cat. That article. So, I thought that was a nice way to end my reading of this article. If you want to read the entirety of the thing, I will link it in our show notes. But I just had to share that because, first of all, in general, whether you believe or don't believe, I just found this all interesting. And specifically, this Texas Monthly article from 1985, probably more so because it involved Willie Nelson somehow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And also, I understand the patrons thing, like his regular patrons. But I wouldn't be so annoyed by people who are sick. They just want help.
You're so...
Also, it's Willie Nelson. Get the fuck out of there. That's his club. That's why he's still here today.
You're horrible. Okay. I think this is a perfect place to end it now.
I'm okay. Apparently a boom. Believer. Mic drop. Over. Oh, no. We got to do our regular closing. Okay. Yeah. If you want to write to us or whatever, just say hello. Hi. You can go to our website, nightmaremoviepodcast.com. Our Instagram is at nightmaremoviepodcast. Our Twitter, at nightmareon5th. That's nightmareon5th. Also, where we write stuff, not just us, we've got like some really great stuff you can read over there on horrormovieblog.com or our Twitter where we share all our articles at horrormovieblog. And Thalia will tell us all about our patron and buy me a coffee.
So like Willie World, if you would like to patronize our... Oh, Willie World sounds bad now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you would like to patronize our club, there we go. You could do so at, oh my God, my brain isn't working. Patreon.com/nightmaremoviepodcast. Or you could do a one-time donation at buymeacoffee.com/nightmarepod. Why'd you make that face?
I was going to say, don't forget to like write us a review if you like us. Even if it's like, you know, at least 4 stars and above.
Yeah, do 4.
Nothing
yeah.
less than that. Just move on if you don't like us. Okay.
Okay. All right. So yeah, that's it, everybody. Thank you for listening. And until next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Nightmare on Fifth Street, a horror movie podcast. If you like what you heard, consider hitting that follow button and sharing us with others. We also love reviews if that's your thing. And of course, you can always subscribe to our Patreon and on your favorite podcast platform like Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Whatever way you choose to support us, whether it's listening, sharing, or subscribing, we are truly grateful. Thank you so much.